Welcome to the BLG Podcast, where we discuss industry trends and legal issues that affect Canadian businesses. Borden Ladner Gervais is one of Canada's largest law firms, with more than 700 lawyers, intellectual property agents, and other professionals located in five cities across Canada. In this edition, BLG lawyers Duncan Marsden and Andrew Posbon discuss the recent updates to the Occupational Health and Safety Act and the workers' compensation system in Alberta, and the implications for employers.
Thank you very much and welcome. My name is Duncan Marsden. I'm a partner in the Labour and Employment Group in Borden Ladner Gervais Calgary office. I've always been a labour and employment lawyer, starting my career with the world's largest law firm in London, England, before moving to Canada with my wife in 2007 and beginning my career at BLG. With me today is Andrew Posbon, a senior associate in the Labour and Employment Group. Hi, Andrew.
How's it going, Duncan?
Good. In December 2017, an act to protect the health and well-being of working Albertans was passed. This act updated the Occupational Health and Safety Act and the workers' compensation system in Alberta. These were the first significant updates to this legislation in over 40 years. The changes to the WCB system came into effect on January 1, 2018, and the new OHS laws came into effect on June 1, 2018. Andrew, great to have you here today. Before we begin, why don't you tell us a little bit about your practice area and your background?
Sure. So I've been working at Borden Ladner Gervais for the past 6 years. My practice is a mix of labor and employment and commercial litigation. Primary part of my practice is also occupational health and safety. And so this topic of conversation I'm well versed in and have a lot of experience in.
Great. Now, I famously, or maybe not famously, described this topic as the driest topic in our recent symposium, but you had a great attendance, I think, because most people recognized how important these things are.
I think we got some really good feedback afterwards. I did tell everyone that it was a very dry topic in advance, so that might have segued people into it. But I think it is a topic that has a lot of interest for employers just due to the fact that there are so many new changes that are coming out, and people and employers should be aware of those changes and those new requirements.
Yeah, that's great. And so while it might not be the most exciting topic, we think it's probably one of the most relevant at the moment.
I would agree with that.
What are some of these changes?
So they are pretty significant, as I mentioned. One of the first big ones for the workers' compensation system, there's been a number of things that have been rolled out since January 1st of this year. Some of them are still being rolled out. The big one that we've received a lot of questions on from employers are about worker reinstatement. So one of the proposed sections to the WCB Act is Section 88.1, and it's not yet adopted. But this imports the concept of undue hardship, and that's a concept that has been imported from human rights legislation. Generally, undue hardship must be assessed on the individual facts, and what for one employer is undue hardship is not necessarily the same for another. And so what that has changed is there's now an obligation on employers to accommodate workers who have been injured to the point of undue hardship, and if there's no accommodation, there's a potential financial penalty on employers.
Okay, so that's a concept that many employers might be aware of with respect to human rights legislation, but now it's being broadened into the workers' compensation sphere.
That's correct. So as I mentioned, the section has not yet been adopted. There's been a draft policy that has gone out, and that's available on the WCB website. And it talks about there's an obligation on employers to offer suitable employment in a comparable position. Suitable employment, it means that the employer has to provide an opportunity to do work that doesn't make the injury worse and that provides benefits to both the worker and the employer. This can be permanent or transitional, but must take into account aptitudes, skills, and the type of work that's available. So what that means is you can't just place another worker in an area that the worker would be unsuccessful in. As far as comparable, the WCB will look at job duties, hours of work, geographic location of the work, level of responsibilities, even supervision. And so what that means is the job must be similar. You can't just make a worker do menial tasks. It really has to be similar to what the worker was doing prior to being injured on the worksite.
Okay. And so what are we saying here? Are we saying that this new legislation prevents employers from terminating employees if they're injured at work?
And we have got that question a lot. I think employers are pretty concerned about that. But that's not what it says at all. There's an obligation now on employers, so the onus is on the employer to show that the termination was not due to the accident or due to the worker's injuries. So if there is a dispute, the WCB will look at it and make a final determination, but it doesn't prevent an employer from terminating an employee. It just makes sure that the employer has to make the decision in good faith. And as I said, it can't be affected by the worker's injury or what happened on the work site.
Thanks, Andrew. So are you telling me that this means that employers cannot terminate their employees' employment if they're injured at work?
No, not at all. And you'll have to remember that this is not implemented yet. But once it is, or if it is, the onus will be on the employer to show that the termination was not related to the accident. There's also a presumption in this new draft policy. If the worker is employed within 6 months, there's a presumption that the employer has not fulfilled its obligation to reinstate the worker. Ultimately, if there is a dispute over the issue, the WCB will look at it and they'll make a final determination. So it's not saying that an employer cannot terminate an employee. It just has to be done for legitimate business reason.
Right. And the onus will be on the employer to show that the termination was not related to the accident, presumably.
That's correct.
I mean, the way I see this, it's not necessarily hugely different from the situation at the moment, which is that employers would rarely terminate the employment of an employee with an injury anyway, because there would be concerns about the disability from a human rights perspective.
That's right. But now it's codified in the WCB legislation, as well as they'll have this draft policy that will be implemented at that time that they can point to, that employers will now have to justify their actions not only to the Human Rights Commission, but potentially to WCB as well.
Okay, so it's an extra avenue that employers have to be concerned about if they're looking to terminate the employment of an injured employee.
That's correct.
Okay, so that's WCB, but I understand that there have also been changes to occupational health and safety legislation. Is that right?
That's right. So the occupational health and safety legislation has been completely overhauled. So as of June 1st, there's completely new obligations for employers in Alberta. There's new obligations for workers. And the Alberta government has essentially said that it covers three basic rights. So it's the right to refuse dangerous work, the right to know about workplace hazards, and the right to be involved in health and safety discussions. So that includes being involved in a health and safety committee, having access to information, and that type of thing.
And what else should employers know about these changes?
Well, the changes are significant. So there's specific policies that must be addressed. So there's requirements to have a workplace violence policy. There's a requirement to have a workplace harassment policy. There's additional training that's required under the new legislation for supervisors, for workers. So essentially, the scope of what's required on employers has been expanded significantly. So there's a lot of new changes in the legislation that needs to be addressed by employers. One of the other big things that we'll talk about is the requirement for a health and safety program. So all of these things, employers need to be sure that they are checking the box and making sure that they are abiding by all of these legislative requirements.
And what if they don't? What are the consequences?
There's significant consequences. So an OHS officer can show up to site. They can issue an administrative fine. Those can be up to $10,000 for each violation. You can be prosecuted under the OHS legislation. The fines can range up to $500,000 for a first offense and jail time. So those are usually occur where there's been a workplace injury. But as far as the administrative fines, if there's something not in place, those are the types of things that can be issued by the OHS officers.
So it sounds to me like they're relatively straightforward steps, but employers need to act now to get the steps in place if they haven't already done it to avoid these types of issues further down the line. Is that right?
That's right. So I think a lot of employers are not even aware of the changes, or at least aware of the extent of what's required. So the OHS legislation has specific things that must be included in a workplace violence policy, specific things that must be included in a harassment policy, or specific things that must be included in a health and safety program. And employers are not aware of these things. So a lot of employers are saying, you know, I have a workplace violence policy, or I have a workplace harassment policy, but they don't know that they're not meeting what's specifically required under the legislation.
Okay. And so if employers want to find out more, they can obviously come to you, but where else can they go? On the Service Canada website or the Alberta Occupational Health and Safety website?
So the Alberta government has actually released a number of pamphlets that are available online that sort of address all the new changes. obviously, you know, we're more than happy to look at policies and procedures and that type of thing, or provide training on these different issues. So we are seeing a lot of employers come to us more regularly now to address some of these changes. But yeah, there is additional information that's available online as well.
So the real takeaway is, if you haven't done something already, you need to do something now.
It needs to be done now.
Okay. And I understand that there's also a new specific obligation to provide competent supervisors. How's that work?
I'm not sure how that's going to be done, and I think employers are getting a little bit concerned about it. But I think a bigger concern is for the supervisors. So now there's specific obligations for supervisors, and supervisors must be competent. They must physically protect the health of safeties and workers. They must advise workers of all health and safety hazards. They must report health and safety concerns to employers. And there's an obligation to prevent worksite violence and harassment. So that's a significant change in that it could result in supervisors being charged more frequently under the occupational health and safety legislation. So previously, I had seen a number of instances where supervisors were charged, but they was basically put under a general obligation to ensure the safety of workers at the worksite. Now there's specific sections under the Act that the occupational health and safety officers can point to and could potentially prosecute supervisors. And so that's a significant liability for supervisors, and it could result in supervisors saying, we don't want to take on that risk and that liability going forward. So I think it's a big concern, and it's something that supervisors need to be aware of and told in advance as to those potential risks and liabilities.
Yes, but specifically, I mean, there's a requirement for supervisors to prevent violence and harassment in the workplace. I'm not sure that's something I'd want to take on necessarily, and I agree with you. I could see exactly a situation where employers might struggle to find supervisors willing to take these responsibilities on.
Right, and that's the violence and the harassment in the worksite is actually a new section that's been introduced throughout the legislation as well. But it is something that's very risky for supervisors to take on, especially for supervisors that may not have the type of training in that type of area. So it's going to be something new and something that's going to need a lot of training from employers on.
Training is going to be key, I think, in that element with your new supervisors.
I agree.
So what are some of the other big changes?
So the other big one that I've seen is the requirement to develop a health and safety program. So previously, there wasn't any specific requirement for a health and safety program. Now there's a requirement to have a health and safety program for all employers that have more than 20 workers at a worksite. And there's 10 mandated elements. So you can have more than that, but there's 10 specific mandated elements in the legislation that must be in every health and safety program. You know, most of them, I think, are generally followed, but there's a few that I see missing from a lot of health and safety programs or health and safety policies that I review regularly, such as a schedule and procedures for regular inspection of the program or procedures to protect the health and safety when there's other employers involved. So these are specific things that must be addressed in the program going forward. There's also a requirement to involve the health and safety committee or the health and safety representative in the development of the health and safety program.
You mentioned the health and safety committees and health and safety representatives. Now, these weren't previously requirements under the old legislation, were they?
No, not at all. So previously, the legislation talked about health and safety committees being in place if there was a ministerial order, and that was only at specific work sites. These are usually at extremely large projects or dangerous projects. In those cases, the minister might order a health and safety committee be in place at that work site. Now there's a requirement for any work site to have either a health and safety committee or a health and safety representative if there are more than 5 workers at the work site. So that's a significant change. So if there's more than 20 workers at a work site for 90 days or more, a health and safety committee is required. If there's between 5 and 19 workers at a work site for 90 days or more, a health and safety representative is required.
Okay, so new obligations kick in if you've got 5 or more workers at a work site for 90 days or more. But what if you've got multiple workers at multiple work sites? How does that work?
And it really just depends on the number of workers at that specific work site. For example, if there's 50 workers at one location, there'd just be one committee required. If there's 5,000 workers at one location, still just one committee. If there's 60 workers at 3 different work sites, you'd have to have 3 committees, one at each specific work site. If there was 60 workers at 10 locations, 10 reps, So it really just depends on the number of workers at that specific work site.
Oh, so it depends. I mean, the more evenly distributed your workforce is throughout the work sites, the greater your obligations might become. I mean, if you've got 5,000 workers at one location, there's only one committee. But if you've got 6 work sites, each with 10 workers, you might have to have 10 individual reps.
That's correct.
Okay, great. So what are the roles of the health and safety committee or the health and safety representative?
So essentially, it's their role is to work together to identify and solve health and safety concerns at the work site. Really what they're there for are to be the workers' representatives on site, and their specific obligations throughout the legislation as to what they're required to do. First off, they're required to promote the health and awareness and interest of health and safety, and their specific obligations, as I mentioned, the duties include things like identifying hazards, developing and promoting programs for education and information, making recommendations to the employer, inspecting the worksite at regular intervals, that type of thing.
Participating in investigations as well, presumably.
That's correct.
Yeah, so they have a role to be engaged throughout the health and safety process, presumably in education, training, and reviewing hazards and anything to do with education in of health and safety in the workplace, I would assume.
Yeah, and that's going to require a lot of training and information to be provided to them. For a lot of workers on the work site, they're not going to have this type of information. They're not going to have this knowledge basis to how to conduct or how to inspect a work site, as to how to make recommendations or how to provide education or training, that type of thing. That's going to be things that the employers are going to need to teach these health and safety committee representatives or these committees.
So who chooses them? Who chooses the committee and who chooses the representatives?
So as far as the representative, that's just chosen by the employer. So as I said, if there's between 5 and 19 workers at the worksite, it can be chosen by the employer. But if there's more than that, the obligations on both the employer and the workers at the worksite to nominate individuals to be part of that committee. So it's not only that the workers must be involved, but the employer also has to be involved as to selecting those members.
And how many people would you have in a committee? Is there any requirement as to how many people you would have on that?
The only specific requirement is to have 2 from the worker side and then 2 from the employer side. So you can have more than that or less than that. And there must be 1 designated representative from each, the worker side and the employer side.
And is there any requirement for training for these individuals?
There's actually specific obligations for training throughout the legislation. They're required to be trained by the employer on their job duties and responsibilities. So, as I said, the committee and the reps need to know exactly what their requirements are and what their obligations are under the legislation. So that's the first part of the training. But there's also an obligation to take additional training, and the legislation talks about taking the greater of 16 hours or 2 shifts to attend health and safety training programs, seminars, or courses of instruction. So that's ongoing training that's required in addition to training as to what their obligations are under the legislation.
And obviously there have to be meetings between the health and safety committee or the health and safety representative and the employer. Are there any requirements as to how often these meetings take place?
As far as the representative, it talks about just meeting regularly. There's no specific obligations in the legislation talking about that. But as far as the committee, there are specific obligations as to when they must meet. And the legislation talks about meeting within 10 days after the establishment of the committee, and that once every quarter following that. So there's not a minimum number of meetings that must take place, but there's also requirements to keep minutes of the meetings, and there's also a requirement to keep records and to have those records available to other workers at the worksite if they require it.
So I just want to understand, Andrew, there are all these obligations to have a health and safety committee and a health and safety representative. Is that on every employer in Alberta?
Unlike the workers' compensation legislation, there's no exempt industries. So every employer in Alberta has these obligations. So they have an obligation to complete the health and safety program. They have the obligation to complete harassment and violence policies and training. And there's also the obligation to create these health and safety committees if there's more than 20 workers at a worksite for 90 days. So it applies to all industries. There's no exempt industries under the occupational health and safety legislation.
So pretty much every employer in Alberta is at least going to have a representative requirement, because almost every employer is going to have 5 or more employees on the worksite.
100% right.
And you would think that the large majority of employers in Alberta will need to set up a health and safety committee and keep minutes of the meetings and go through these obligations because most employers are going to have 20 or more employees.
And I think most employers have no idea about a lot of these changes. So at our symposium, I had a ton of questions about people coming up and being unclear as to what these new requirements entailed and how they're going to go about training all their employees on these issues. So I'm hearing a lot of feedback from employers about that specific question about whether it applies to all of these industries and what they're going to be required to do going forward.
So let's be clear about that. Law firms have this requirement.
Even we have these requirements.
Scary stuff. So under previous occupational health and safety legislation, if there was a serious injury at the worksite, it had to be reported to Alberta Labor. Has that changed at all?
Right. So serious injury was previously defined as an admission to the hospital of more than 2 days or the death of a worker. So now, under the new legislation, any injury or incident that results in a worker being admitted to a hospital, regardless of how long that admission is for, must be reported. So that's a complete change. So if a worker just goes in for a half a day or even an hour or two, as long as they're admitted to the hospital, there's a requirement to report it to occupational health and safety. This includes every incident in which a physician writes an admitting order, and that's a complete change as to what was under the previous legislation. There's also a number of new specific requirements for events that must be reported if they occur at a mine site. But that's sort of the big ones that we regularly run into about are the serious injury and those changes that with respect to that legislation.
I guess the biggest concern is that employers might be reluctant to send their employees to the hospital to get checked over in the event of an injury, just in case the physician writes something up and then they're required to report it.
Right. And there's specific obligations once that happens. So as soon as a serious injury or accident or even a near miss now occurs, the prime contractor has an obligation to either report it to the director of inspection. It must be made aware to the health and safety committee or the health and safety representative. It must be documented and reported, and the corrective actions must be undertaken by the employer. So that's not only where there's an injury or serious injury and accident, but also where there's a near miss. That's also been something that's changed as to what was under the previous legislation. So there's a lot of new additional obligations, such as investigating and reporting, that are under the new legislation that have been definitely expanded upon significantly under the new legislation.
So are there any other changes worth mentioning?
The one big thing that we haven't touched on today is the obligation on employers to address harassment in the workplace. Normally, you wouldn't think of harassment and violence being a workplace hazard, but now there's specific obligations in the Occupational Health and Safety Act to address workplace harassment. So that's an obligation on employers to ensure that the psychological and social well-being of workers is being followed. And that's a significant change, and that's going to impose high costs on employers, and it's going to cause disruption in employers to address all of these changes. Just a few of the changes to touch on: employers are going to be required to investigate and take corrective action. They're going to be required to develop a separate violence and harassment plan, and they're going to be required to provide training to workers on preventing and responding to violence and harassment in the workplace.
So one of the themes we keep coming back to again and again today are that there seem to be requirements under this new legislation to have policies in place over specific issues that employers maybe previously didn't have policies on, and also a huge requirement for training with respect to employees and supervisors in these areas.
Right. So policies and training are the big thing that I would focus on today. There must be policies and procedures in place, but they also must be communicated to workers. So the workers must have training. They must be followed, regularly looked at. They must be effective. So they must need to be in compliance with the legislation at the time. So they need to be reviewed on a periodic basis. So there's a lot of obligations on employers on a continuing and ongoing basis going forward to make sure that the policies are in place and the training's in place and being adhered to.
And presumably a health and safety representative would have to have some view or at least sign off on these types of policies.
So either the health and safety rep or the health and safety committee need to be involved in being consultation while these policies and procedures are being developed. That's actually a specific requirement. So If there's a policy in place that all addresses all of these issues, but the health and safety rep or the health and safety committee wasn't being consulted with during that development, that might need to be looked at again.
So you might need to consult with them over the policy that you've achieved and then put it in place again to ensure that you've complied with the legislation.
That's right.
So, Andrew, you mentioned the health and safety committees and the health and safety representatives, and they are made up of employees or their employees themselves. Presumably, employers have to give employees time off work, paid time off work, to carry out these duties associated with those positions?
Right. So there's time off for the meetings. There's a time off for the training. All of that needs to be paid for by the employer.
So it's a significant financial obligation, more than anything, on employers to make sure that they're following the legislation, but also allowing employees time away from work in order to perform the duties required of them under the legislation.
Right, that's a potential big loss in time and loss in productivity.
So we've gone through a lot today, Andrew. What are your two key things that employers should be doing immediately, having heard this podcast?
So I think the biggest things are to look at your policies and make sure they're in compliance with the changes under the legislation, and also to provide training to the appropriate persons, whether it be supervisors or the health and safety committee or the health and safety rep. So I'd say policies and training are the two big takeaways from today.
And are these things you can help clients with? I mean, policies are one thing, but in particular, training is going to be very difficult to create. Is this something that you are helping clients with already?
So we already do provide management training on these specific issues, and it's something that we're going to continue to do going forward, and I think that it's something that needs to be addressed by all employers in Alberta.
Andrew, thank you very much for this insight. I've really enjoyed talking with you, and I've really enjoyed learning a few new things about these significant changes to health and safety legislation in Alberta. Thank you for listening to the BLG podcast. We would love to hear your comments and feedback on this episode. If you would like to get in touch with me directly, I can be reached at dmarsden@blg.com. To learn more about BLG and our other areas of expertise, visit us online at blg.com.